Everyone, thanks for listening to Radiolab, and thank you to all of you who have chipped in to help support the show. Listener contributions are the reason we can do this. So thanks.
You're listening to Radiolab. Radiolab from Public Radio
WNYC
and NPR.
Today's show?
Have you ever heard of this, Jen?
Well, I mean,
it's about choice.
I don't know what to expect.
I believe you're about to see a miracle.
And we thought we would start things off in a parking lot in sunny Berkeley, California, with a psychologist.
I'm Barry Schwartz. I'm a professor of psychology at Swarthmore College, where I have been teaching since 1971. The only job I ever applied for. So I think deep down in my past, I appreciated the value of simplifying one's options.
He even wrote a book about it called The Paradox of Choice. And to illustrate that paradox, he brought us to, well, you'll see.
Barry, will you give us a visual as to what we're doing?
So we're about to walk into Berkeley's very famous Berkeley Bowl, which is a supermarket. Very unusual when it comes to fresh fruits and vegetables.
Wow.
It has a selection unlike any I've ever seen in my life.
Dad, could you describe your first view of the produce?
I see just fields of oranges.
So we've got navel orange, Valencia juice orange, Texas Valencia juice orange, organic navel orange, Neola tangelos, daisy tangerines,
Montano bananas.
We have large navel
plantain
oranges,
bananas,
small
red bananas, Urosaba bananas,
large Gaylord, heirloom Washington Pacific rose,
Hawaiian plantain,
golden delicious, Morocco blood orange, Annie Smith,
ripe bananas,
Georgia Vidal, We have freedom of choice with respect to every
yellow onion.
And you see it in every area of life.
Pearl onion.
In romantic relationships.
Georgia Vidalia sweet.
When I was growing up, the answer to the question, should I get married, was obvious. The answer to the question, when, was obvious.
Which was, of course.
Of course, and as soon as possible. Well, now, there are no defaults.
Well, now we sweet yellow.
Every imaginable lifestyle is available.
You can be gay, straight, bi.
Exactly.
Oh, boy. Look at this. Seedless grapes.
Yeah, seedless grapes. Oh, wait, more apples.
The sense that there are a million opportunities for you, you can make your own rules. Just overwhelming. Overwhelming. Counseling centers, psych services centers, and universities are bursting at the seams. Why? These are the most privileged kids ever. The schools are giving them everything they could possibly want, and they're banging down the doors because they're so screwed up. Why? What's going on? An answer is people don't know what to do. They don't know how to choose. They can't face a world in which everything is available. And I see this in the college. It's heartbreaking to see these incredibly talented college seniors who we have given every opportunity to do whatever they want, terrified at graduation. They know that this is a stage in life where walking through one door means they're going to hear a lot of other doors slam shut. They can't bear the thought that they may walk through the wrong door.
It's choice angst.
It is. It's the disease of modernity.
Oh, this is very... What?
Sorry. Well, just come on. Go ahead and just do the show, but I say come on in reservation.
Why?
Well, because, like, people from Swarthmore College get to pay, like, $45,000 a year for the privilege of... You know, that's a very, very rare slice of America.
Yeah,
that has...
fine. You're right.
Thank you.
But come on, you have this, too. I mean, how many speeds on your bike do you really need?
Well, that's a different thing. I mean, I don't need 22 speeds. I happen to make do with 5.
There you go. So there are some real questions here, and on this hour, we're going to look at... Choice
and decision making. When do we choose?
How do we choose? The limits of choose.
The limits of choice.
Of choose. The limits of choose.
On Radiolab.
I'm Jed Abumrad.
And I'm Robert Krulwich.
Stay with us, bitches. Okay, to begin, are you ready? So let me just ask a basic question, which is, okay, so a lot of choice can be bad, but clearly we need some choice. So what's the right amount? Actually, how much can you really handle? I asked that question to Barry Schwartz.
Well, There's a classic study in psychology from 50 years ago called The Magic Number 7.
The magical number 7 plus or minus 2.
That's Jonah Lehrer, author of the book Proust Was a Neuroscientist, and a new book called How We Decide. In the 50s, he says,
I think like 1956.
A guy named George Miller wondered about this. How much can a human brain really hold? So he conducted a series of memory tests, asked people to memorize different sets of numbers, letters, musical notes. And what Miller found out is that the average human
could hold about 7 digits, plus or minus 2, at any given moment in working memory.
When you say working memory, you mean like what we can keep in our top of mind memory, right? Not like memory, but like RAM.
Exactly. Random digits. You can hold about 7, plus or minus 2. And with practice, people can you know, really bump it up a bit.
With practice, Robert, with practice.
I'm still struggling with 666666. And I think to myself, I think I got the first 4.
Well, I mean, it's not an accident that so many of these random digits we have to memorize, from phone numbers to social security numbers, are 7 plus or minus 2.
Now, the interesting thing is what happens to our decision-making powers when you try and get more than 7 in your head.
What?
You want me to shut the door?
Yes,
door. Well, let me introduce you to someone.
I'm Baba Sher. I'm a professor here at the Stanford Graduate School of Business. In marketing, a lot of my research, it has to do with the brain.
And tricking people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, Robert, I want to tell you about one particular experiment that he did.
Okay. So the experiment was pretty straightforward.
It goes like this. He got a bunch of subjects together. He said, okay, I'm going to give you all a number.
A number.
On a little card, you're going to read the number, and I want you to commit that number to memory.
Take as much time as you want to memorize the number.
And then he says,
you're now going to walk to the next room and recall the number. And that's what subjects think. Test subjects think that they're going to be doing.
So they know they're going to be in one place, getting a number, going to another place, reciting that number.
That's right.
That's all they know.
That's all they know.
What they don't know is that not everybody is getting the same kind of number.
So some people get a 7-digit number. Some people get a 2-digit number.
That I can do, by the way. I think I can do 2 digits.
No, I doubt it. All the subjects have to do is they've got to memorize a number, walk out of room 1, down the hall to room 2, then recite their number. Now, just imagine, you and me?
Mm-hmm.
Person with a 2-digit number in their head was walking out of room 1.
1, 2 is my number. I can definitely remember this.
Down the hall. Same time, someone with 7 digits in their head.
1, 2, 2, 8, 9, 3, 6.
Walks down the hall. 2, 8, 9. Now, here's where the trickery comes in. As they're walking down the hall, mid-memorizing, all of a sudden...
Excuse me?
They pass a lady in the hallway, and she's holding something.
Sorry to interrupt you, but would you like a snack?
Sure. Okay.
She says, here, have a snack, just as our way of saying thanks for participating in the study. You can have one of 2 snacks
right.
You choose.
You can choose between either A, a big fat slice of chocolate cake, or B, a nice bowl of fruit salad.
Meanwhile, they've both got these numbers still in their head. Now, here's the weird thing. When they finally make their choice.
What would you like? Some yummy cake or some healthy fruit.
The people, this is crazy. The people with 2 digits in their head.
You know, I love cake, but I think I'll take the fruit.
Almost always choose the fruit.
It's healthy.
Whereas the people with 7 digits in their head almost always choose the cake.
You know, the cake. I want the cake.
And we're talking by huge margins here.
It was significant. I mean, this was like in some cases a 20, 25, 30 point difference.
Huh. So what...
Meaning if you have 7 digits in your head, you are twice as likely to choose cake than fruit. Twice.
So, let's get on with this. So the people with the 7 digits get the cake. I get that part. I don't know why.
That doesn't interest you as to why they would choose...
Well, a little, yeah. Why?
Okay, good. Now that I've got your interest, I'll tell you the theory.
Okay.
Okay, and this is where it gets interesting. It seems that the brain is anatomically organized into different systems.
Dual systems is what they're called.
According to Jonah, you have a rational deliberative system, which is sort of more to the front of the brain. And then deeper in the brain, you have an emotional unconscious system. And according to Jonah, these two systems are often at war.
I mean, there's constant competition between the rational brain and the emotional brain. They're always competing for attention and to guide and direct your behavior.
Especially when you have a tough choice like Baba Shiv's cake versus fruit. There, the competition is fierce.
The emotional automatic system is pushing them towards the cake.
The emotional brain loves sweet, gooey chocolate cake. That's really what you want.
Me chocolate, no.
On the other hand,
the deliberative system, on the other hand, comes and says, wait a second.
Are you thinking about this choice carefully?
This probably is not good for you because...
calories, sugar, high fat content.
Think about your waistline.
It's going to make you chubby.
Think about your cholesterol.
It is not good for your health. It is not good for your self-esteem.
And that acts as a check.
But if you give that rational, deliberative system seven numbers, just seven, to memorize.
1-2-2-8-9-3-6. 1-2, no, shh. 1-2-2-8-5. 1-2-2.
Shh.
1.
So delicious. Eight,
cholesterol. One,
suddenly,
two,
the rational brain has too much to keep track of.
You know you want to.
Shh, shh.
It's one, getting tired.
Two,
it can't put up as much of a fight.
Oh.
Which means greater likelihood that the emotions will drive their choices.
The astounding thing here, says Jonah, is not simply that, you know, sometimes emotion wins over reason. It's how easily it wins. Seven numbers is all it takes to screw up reason.
Just think about how astonishingly limited that is.
Yeah, I mean, compared to emotion, team reason is, well...
pretty feeble. And there's no way around it, and we can kind of rage against the machine, but the brute fact is it's just one microchip in a big computer.
Mm.
And when we always rely on it, all the advice you get in decision-making is stop and think, slow down, take your time. And yet when you actually look at the brain, that can lead you to rely on a feeble piece of machinery.
All right, let me just offer an admittedly inconsequential case in point. There we were, the Berkeley Bowl. In the apple aisle, there were thousands and thousands of apples to choose from. Okay, not thousands, but a lot. And Robert and I get in our heads, well, we're going to choose, let's each choose an apple. And Robert,
yes,
being Robert, decides, like, in 6 seconds.
Because it had this really cool name.
Washington Pacific Road.
Zazz. I'm going to get a Zazz.
Me, I deliberate.
I'm going to get the...
maybe I should give away. Let's go to the organic.
We're running out of time.
Okay. I lined up about 12 apples, compared them by price, size, color, and everything I could think of, and eventually decided on a giant Korean apple pear, which was the only logical choice because it was bigger than his.
This is a 9-pound apple.
Check.
It is large.
It was more expensive. $2.89.
Check.
Definitely way more original.
But it isn't an apple. It's a
check.
And I figure, as we're checking out,
paper bag or plastic?
Paper, please.
Game over. I am the winner. But a couple hours later, we get to the airport. We have some time before our flight. I grab a plastic knife. We cut the apples, and we do a taste test.
Okay, all right, ready?
One,
here we go.
Two, three. And guess whose apple is the best?
I'm guessing the Zazz apple.
Oh, this is a much better apple.
Yes.
Oh, so good.
This apple wins in almost every department.
Very good.
My apple... I don't even want to talk about my apple.
This doesn't taste like an apple at all.
It has a surprise. Is that a worm? That's a worm.
Gigantic core.
Is that a core or is that an animal living there?
Anyhow, according to Jonah, where I went wrong?
Oh, you've short-circuited your prefrontal cortex there.
The prefrontal cortex is right here in your forehead, and that's where the irrational brain lives, and I just had given it too many things to keep track of.
You know, all these apples, you can only hold so much data at one, you know, at any given moment. So you can fixate on seven apples, but only one piece of information for each apple, how red they are or how shiny they are.
So you can't do seven apples with seven variables, because then you've got 49.
49,
that's way past what...
exactly.
No. But there is a bigger problem than brain fatigue, if you ask Barry Schwartz, and it happens after you choose.
You're plagued with the possibility that you didn't do as well as you could have.
Yeah, I'm
regret.
I'm lamenting what could have been.
Which I definitely felt at the airport.
And chances are, you didn't do as well as you could have.
Well, therein lies the rub of a place like Berkeley Bowl. You get seduced by an 11-pound apple that turns out to be a fake watermelon with an anus.
All right, so we now understand the problem that Barry proposes. He says that if you have to make a choice, too often the choice is the wrong one because your brain is too full of facts.
It hurts your head.
It hurts your head, or because if you make the choice, you then think, oh, damn, I should have chosen otherwise, the regret
mm-hmm.
problem.
Right.
There are ways to handle this. Our friend Oliver Sacks, Dr. Oliver Sacks, the neuroscientist, is a regular on this program. We were mm-hmm. talking, and I told him about this issue, and he said, oh, I don't have the problem. I said, what do you mean you don't have the problem? He said, well, I make, he says, a willful choice that certain things I care about a lot and I worry over, and then, oh, there's a whole swath of my life that I just
don't choose.
Yes, my housekeeper actually comes tomorrow, and she will get half a gallon of soy milk, half a gallon of prune juice. She will make a gallon or so of orange jello. She will make a large bowl of tabbouleh. She will get 6 or 7 tins of sardines, because I eat sardines with tabbouleh every evening. She will get 7 apples and 7 oranges.
7 apples? Why 7 apples and 7 oranges?
Okay, well, because I'm also very greedy and impulsive. And therefore, I have to have a rule that I'm permitted to eat an apple a day and a pear a day. If I had 70 apples, I would eat them all.
So you have worked it out so that you are regulating yourself, and somehow your appetite has become regulated in the meantime.
Yes, I never get bored with my food.
Why not? That seems so boring.
I don't find it boring. I enjoy it equally and with equal relish every time.
If I were to sit down with you and describe to you a new candy, I don't know, almond M&Ms, and I were to do it with all the talent that I could possibly bring to description. So you would see the nice outer candy shell, it would glisten, it would be sugary, it would have this most delicious nut inside. Would you not feel at all tempted to break the habit of years, whatever your sweet is, and just venture over to almond M&Ms?
I would certainly try the almond M&M, but since you mention it, with chocolate, there is a shop close to me which has broken 72% chocolate. I go there each day. Indeed, I have, as you see with me, a single dollar in my pocket. I put it down and I say a dollar's worth of 72.
Every day?
Every day, neither more nor less.
Can you recall the moment when you somehow leaped from whatever your predecessor chocolate routine was to the 72% cocoa content? Something wonderful must have happened on that day where you got yanked from the deep rut that you were in into the next deep rut. But I'm just curious, what happened on the day of change?
I don't clearly recollect, but I can tell you a day of negative change. This again goes back to my carnivorous days, when I got a thing about kidneys. For some reason...
You mean the organ or the pee?
No, the organ. Rognon. It was when I was a resident at UCLA, and I, as I now have sardines every time for dinner, at that time living in Topanga Canyon, I would have kidneys, and I would go to the farmer's market, and I would buy my weekly kidneys. But on one occasion, a strange mistake happened. Whether I made the mistake or whether I was misheard, I, instead of my usual 2 pounds of kidneys, I was given 22 pounds of kidneys. if a mistake is made, I'm too shy to say anything.
Anyhow, aren't you embarrassed to be such a wimp, both of routine and of shyness? I mean, it's like it's a double duty there.
Yes, I am. Well, what the hell? Anyhow, with these, I should, of course, have thrown away this monstrous, palpitating bag of kidneys. but in the event, I took it back to my little house in Topanga, and the then followed an increasingly nightmarish period in which I had kidneys for breakfast, for lunch, kidneys stewed, sweet kidneys, and finally, after about 10 days, by which time I'd eaten about 50 pounds, an uncontrollable nausea and vomiting took hold of me.
Literally, or just of the mind?
I think it was literally as well, because I remember seeing bits of kidney in the vomit.
I see.
And I then threw out the rest of the kidneys, and I've never had a kidney since.